Good morning, everyone, and yes, welcome to the second installment in our three-part series, Planning for Financial Success. My name is Selom Enim, for those who don't know who I am, and today we want to try to demystify the second part of our journey, which is investing. A lot of people make investing seem quite complicated, and therefore people tend to shy away from it. But I'm trying to convince everyone around here that investing is a lot simpler than it is made out to be. One of the main principles of this series is that wealth is not by luck. It's something that is not reserved for the lucky few either. It is a series of small, deliberate decisions that we take and repeat over time that result in the final goal. We can grow money in many, many ways, but by the end of today, you will see that there are four core parts that we can take. The song that we ended, that preceded this session, said, "Through him, all things come." So we need to always remember that from him and to him, everything goes. God is responsible for everything that we have, and God is responsible for everything that we are going to achieve, whether it is something that we plan or whether it is by his divine intervention. So at all times, even though we are on this journey and we are seeking knowledge, it's always to remember that it is God who gives. Next slide, please. So let's recap what we have done so far. And I think it's really important as well that this, I don't want this to be a lecture, so I'm just talking to people. So by all means, please feel free if you have any questions or if you have any contributions, by all means, just join. I don't want to be just talking to people. Yeah, let's recap what we've done so far. So at the moment, in the beginning, we set up a framework which is broken down into three main stages. The first stage is the solid foundation. Sorry, go back. The first stage is a solid foundation. The second stage being the growth and investment. And the third stage being our legacy. We had a wonderful first session a few weeks ago. And what we realized is that investing and growth is only possible when you have a solid foundation. When you have a solid financial foundation, backed by a solid foundation in faith as well. Trying to invest when you have debt is like building your house on sand. It will ultimately collapse. Trying to invest when you have bad financial habits is also like building on sand. You will not progress. So it's really important that we go back and we fix our foundations and make sure we have a very core foundation and a solid one. The core principles we discussed during that session was to build an honest budget. An honest budget gives you clarity and it lets you know exactly the situation that you are. It also enables you to be able to plan and to set goals. The second pillar is to have a positive mindset, a mindset grounded in faith, which gives us confidence to shed the bad habits and overcome any challenges. The third pillar is to aggressively reduce or eliminate debt. This creates breathing space and allows us to grow our disposable income. And then the fourth pillar is to create a safety net, build what we call an emergency fund. This lets you move forward to the next stage of investing, which with a lot more confidence and be calm rather than being scared every 5 minutes. Once you've got the solid foundation, you've done the hard part. The next stage, the next slide, please. So this slide here shows the solid foundation in action. So the very first part, once you've been able to put together a budget, it shows you exactly where you are in your financial situation. You then put into action the points that we discussed in terms of an action plan, which will then help you to be able to turn your situation into a bit of a financial surplus. So in this example, by putting the action plan in place, we've been able to set up a £200 a month surplus in our budgeting from our incomes and our outgoings. Now that £200 is then deployed into aggressively reducing debt in this situation. In this example, the individual has chosen the debt avalanche option. We have two options. We have the snowball option, and then we have the debt avalanche option. The debt avalanche attacks the debt with the highest cost, and you work your way back all the way down. When you successfully reduce your debt, your disposable income now increases. And in this example, it increases from £200 to £460. Now that then enables you to then deploy all of that disposable income to building your safety net, which is your emergency fund. An emergency fund, the size of an emergency fund is typically 3 to 6 months of your total expenses every month. So that's a target. Now, the size of the fund you choose is up to you and your personal conditions. But you can see from this example that if you try to build your emergency fund with debt, you're only able to build it slowly with £200 a month. But when you eliminate debt first, you then have a lot more money at your disposal to then be able to build your emergency fund. And in this example, you're able to build it 2.5 times faster than you would have in the original situation. Next slide, please. Thank you. Another core principle of the last session I had in March was what we call the sustainable growth formula. Many of us spend our income on paying our bills and also feeding our lifestyle. Our lifestyle is effectively the non-essential items. So your holidays, your fancy clothes, your nice cars, nice shoes, all the nice things that make us feel good is what we call, what I term, the lifestyle element. But if you keep funding this directly from your income, it doesn't enable you to grow. So what this sustainable growth formula does is it asks you to channel your income. Once you've got a solid foundation, you've got your disposable income, you've got your emergency fund, you're then able to channel that amount into what we call cash-generating assets. These cash-generating assets will then get proceeds, you'll get proceeds from these cash-generating assets. Now, you could start to spend the money from these cash-generating assets, but what a prudent investor would do would be to then take the funds from these assets that your income is purchasing and reinvest it into your assets. So then it creates a loop. So your assets are now being fed from your income, but also from the proceeds that they generate. In that way, it accelerates your growth and enables you to grow assets, which as your assets grow, naturally the proceeds also grow. Now, this is sustainable because if you set this up right, it could become a self-sustaining loop. And you could eventually decide to get rid of your income, which is where you decide to retire early or to stop working, because the assets will be able to generate enough money to look after your bills and your lifestyle. Or you could continue to work. And if set up right with the right structures, this formula will enable you to look after yourself, your children, and your grandchildren and generations after. So this is a really important pillar in our series, which you've seen in the first one, you see in the second one, and you will see when we move to the legacy stage. Next slide, please. So today, we're looking at the 4 distinct paths to growing our money. There are a few other paths that are not on here, but these are the 4 ones I want us to focus on. First, you have stocks and shares, you've got bonds and commodities, you've got property, and then you've also got business. You don't have to choose one, but if you have a particular one that you lean towards, you can stick with it all throughout your journey. But the prudent investor would try to have a mix and a blend of these, and you will see further down how these the blend of these parts changes as one moves along their journey. Next slide, please. Now, what you find is that, like debt, there's something called tax in the HMRC. No matter how hard you try, HMRC will find you. They will catch you. So, you need to be aware of the impact of tax. Trying to invest by paying tax inefficiently is like taking two steps forward and one step back. So you need to find effective ways in which you are able to grow your investments quicker, legally, without the handbrake that tax gives you. Fortunately, we have a legal method which is known as the Stocks and Shares ISA. We also have other ISAs. So there's a cash ISA, there are junior ISAs. But for this part of our journey, the type of account that we will be making use of is the cash stock and shares ISA. Think of the cash ISA as a tax protector. You are allowed to invest up to £20,000 every year into your stocks and shares ISA. All profits that are made within this account are shielded from tax, which then allows you to then invest and reinvest and enables you to grow your money a lot quicker. This is a very powerful tool that everyone should utilize. It's free. Everyone is entitled to one. So if you don't have one, you should really look to setting one up. You don't have any income tax to the amount of money that's put in there. And you also, a lot of them are flexible. So you don't get locked up with lengthy investment periods. Next slide, please. Now, before we move straight into investing, because we think, yes, we've got our stocks and shares ISA, we've got our emergency fund, we want to jump straight into buying SpaceX or the next wonderful share that you've heard on the news, I think we need to understand a few important concepts. And I want to introduce you to the concept of inflation. I think we hear about inflation quite a lot on the news. In recent times, yes, we've heard about it a lot. The cost of living has increased, and largely due to inflation. Inflation is an enemy to most of us. But to someone who is savvy and knowledgeable, it can also be a very useful friend. What is inflation? Inflation is the quiet tax on our money. It reduces the buying power of our money every time. When you hear someone say inflation is at 4%, what it means is that £100 today, in 12 months' time, can only buy £96 worth of what it can buy today. Every single year, the buying power of your £100 keeps reducing. So it's really important to understand how to use this negative effect positively. Another way in which you can actually explain inflation is if you take, in this example, you take £10,000 and you stick it in your savings account. And the average savings account gives you 1% interest every year. So wonderful 1%, right? So that's what you're getting. So your typical £10,000 in the bank at 1% in 10 years will be worth roughly £11,000. But what is happening silently is that the buying power of that money is reducing. So every morning, you wake up, you check your bank account, and your money's there. It's looking good. It's safe. No one's touching it. But what's really happening is it is buying less and less every time you leave it in that account. So in this example, even though after 10 years, your money grows up in real terms to £11,000, what it can really buy in 10 years is £7,000 worth of what it could buy 10 years ago. So you are effectively losing money. What can we do? The alternative is to put it, like we say, and like when we go back to our sustainable formula is to put that money, instead of putting it in a savings account, is to put it into some form of cash generating assets. What that does is that, in this example, it's growing at 6%. Inflation is clawing at it at 3%. So what you gain is the net 3% in growth. So therefore, you are winning by doing very little, if that makes sense. So that's how you beat inflation. Another way I can put this, I remember my uncle told me that he bought his first house in the 1980s for roughly around £20,000. He even laughed. He bought it on a credit card. But that house is roughly worth about £300,000 today. And that sounds wonderful, right? Just think, oh my God, he's made such a wonderful gain. That is true from a simplistic point of view. But in real terms, much of that growth is due to inflation. The actual increase in the value of the asset is very little. So inflation is really powerful when you combine it with property. That is one asset that really works well together. And we need to understand how we can use it. And in subsequent slides, we'll learn how to use inflation and other concepts to our advantage. Next slide, please. So this brings us to the very first of our paths, which is stocks and shares. Next slide. Yep. Nope. Before. Thank you. Nope. Go back. Yes, thank you. So, stocks and shares. So, what are stocks and shares? When you buy a stock or a share, because the words tend to be used interchangeably, you are becoming a part owner in a real business. That way, you share in the success when it grows and when it makes profit. But on the flip side, you also share in the pain when they lose money. But because we are Christians, we gain more than we lose, right? So that then brings, once you think about stocks and shares, it should bring a profound shift in the way we think about money. Because if it should change us from being consumers to becoming owners. You should always think about ownership rather than just consumership. We don't want to just keep buying and buying and buying. You should now learn to actually be part of the success of these companies. And the stock market gives us the opportunity to do that. I always say, give the example. If you love watching Netflix for hours and hours and hours, why don't you buy shares in Netflix? That way, when you are paying your subscription, you are paying yourself. When you convince your neighbor or your friend to get a subscription, you are paying yourself. So think about it that way when it comes to ownership. The next, we have ETFs. They are called exchange-traded funds. I want you to think of them as a basket of shares, right? So they get bundled up, usually with a particular theme, and you can trade this particular basket of shares as one single stock. So on the stock market, you could, for instance, buy an ETF, which is made up of the top gold mining companies in the world. Or you could buy an ETF, which is made up of the top electric vehicle manufacturers. That way, you don't have to go and buy every single company yourself. You can get them already made in one particular basket. Again, you've got access to these on the stock markets. We also have index funds. Index funds are an entire market put up together in which you can trade. Very popular one you may have heard of is the S&P 500. Some of you may have heard of the FTSE 100, the FTSE 250, and basically so many different index funds that are available. These tend to be low cost and quite hands off. So you invest in them monthly, and you don't really have to worry because the risk balances itself out. And finally, we've got mutual funds. Mutual funds are professionally managed funds that you can buy into. It's hands-off, but then there are costs attributed to it because you're paying for the services of a fund manager or a group of specialists who will be managing these assets for you. Next slide, please. So, you are wondering, well, how do I start investing in the stock market? Well, on this slide, I've got six popular platforms that are available to us in the United Kingdom. They all give us access to the stock market. They give us access to all the assets that I mentioned in terms of ETFs and mutual funds. The main difference you will see is in the fees. The key thing here is if you are looking to invest a larger amount of money, you want to be looking at staying away from percentages in terms of 5% of your assets and then look for somebody who offers you a flat fee. Whereas if you want to be investing a smaller amount and growing it over time, yes, in that case, you want to be moving away from percentages as well. Oh, sorry, you want to be sticking with flat fee, sorry, in that sense. But the key thing is to do your own research on these platforms. There are other platforms that are not listed on here. So it's important to look out for the one that best suits your needs. I use Trading212 and I use Vanguard, and those have been very good in the past. So, yeah, that's a free advert for them. next slide, please. So next asset we can think about, we want to look at is bonds. Now, what are bonds? Stock markets can be very volatile. Today, it can go up 10%, 50%, and tomorrow it will crash 80%. And literally, before you wake up, your money is gone. So that volatility is not fit or is not suitable for everyone. Not everyone has the appetite for a lot of risk or a lot of movement. Bonds offer a nice, comfortable alternative in investing. A bond is effectively a loan. You loan money to governments or you loan money to corporations. And these companies or these entities will pay you an interest over a fixed period of time. They are calmer and they are steadier and they allow you to breathe. There are three different types of bonds. We've got the UK government bill, government bonds, which are known as gilts or treasuries in the United States. You've got the NSI savings bonds, and you've got corporate bonds, like we've talked about. The government bonds can be purchased through the DMO website, but also through some of the platforms that I mentioned. Hargreaves Lansdown and Vanguard offer bond exposure as well. Or you can go to the NSI website. So just search NSI. It will give you access to their website. And you can basically trade or you can buy bonds from there as well. An example of bond in action. If you buy a government bond, a UK government bond, for £10,000 at 5% for 5 years, what this means is that every year for the next 5 years, the UK government will pay you £500. Over that five-year period, that £500 will turn into £2,500. So over that period, you would have made a profit of £2,500. And at the end of that period, the government says, thank you very much, and gives you your £10,000 back. So that, I want you to think of that as the starting point of your investment in terms of risk and exposure. The government has not failed in paying its debts yet in terms of interest rates, and I hope they don't plan on doing so anytime soon. So in that case, it becomes a very safe place to invest your money. So in this example, when you calculate it in real terms, you have made 25% return on your money in 5 years. Next slide, please. And before I move on as well, so we've got corporate bonds. You could do the same by loaning your money to companies, but those companies give you a higher return than the government would give you because you are taking a slightly higher risk. Companies could go bust. So for that risk, you need to make sure that you are being paid extra money to take that risk. The next item we can trade in is called commodities. Now, these are the raw materials that make the world run. We're talking about crude oil, natural gas, precious metals like gold, silver, platinum, we're talking about copper, we're talking about agriculture, coffee, and sugar. Now, isn't it interesting how the materials that actually make the world run are coming from countries that are very poor? But that's a conversation from another day. Yes? The main thing I want us to focus on is how can we trade in these commodities? So again, we are looking at baskets, and we are looking at how we can balance our baskets with different assets to help us to achieve our financial goal. The first one reason why we would invest in commodities is because they are a hedge against inflation. The prices tend to rise in line with inflation. So therefore, you are protected against inflation, if that makes sense. So the true value of coffee, the true value of sugar, rises rather than a perceived value of it. So in future, when you have to sell, you are selling at the true value and not a perceived value. The second reason why we tend to encourage commodities investments is because it offers diversification. You've got assets or commodities like gold and silver. They tend to act in the opposite direction of stocks and shares. So when your shares are going up, gold would tend to be stable. But when your stocks prices are coming down and crashing, gold value tends to rise. So it offers a counterbalance to your portfolio. So you don't wake up one morning and all of your money is gone. So it's good to have a balance. One key thing you need to note, though, is that commodities are traded in U.S. dollars. So you are exposed to whatever is happening to the U.S. dollar. And in this current economy, we understand that the dollar is a little bit shaky. Another thing to note is that the commodities do not pay a cash income. So you are just purely investing in the rise and the value of the assets rather than something that's generating cash on the side as compared to something like property. So for that reason, the encouragement would be to hold roughly about 10% and no more than 10% of your portfolio in commodities. Next slide, please. I would like to focus on gold as an example. The chart did not come through. As you can see, well, the statistics are there for you to research. Gold has risen in value over the last 25 years at an average of 10.9%. That is almost the same as the value of the stock market that has been rising. In 2025, the value of gold rose by as much as 50%. Now, that was actually outperforming the stock market. So you can see the power of having a commodity such as gold in your basket or your portfolio. It's risen from just under 1,000 pounds to it's now just over 3,000 pounds in 2026. Advantage of buying commodities such as gold is that when you buy UK sovereign gold coins or Britannia gold coins, you get capital gains exemption. There's no tax on those. So that's one also benefit that you can think about when thinking to invest in assets such as gold. You can buy gold through your ETFs, through all the platforms that we've talked about, but you're buying them in terms of you're buying them not physically, you're buying them as a coupon. If you want to buy them physically, you have to go to the Royal Mint or you have to visit a site called DigiGold. These are all backed by the UK Treasury, and these are places you can actually buy physical gold. But it's important to note that physical gold comes with additional costs. You have to insure them, and you have to pay for the cost of storage. And remember, it doesn't generate cash as well. Now, it's wonderful for me to stand here and say, yep, gold increased by 25% or it's gone up by 50%. But I think it's really important to know that the past performance of any asset is not... Oh, sorry, yes. Hi, sorry, question, yes. Yes. Sorry, microphone.
Sorry, you mentioned capital gains tax exemption on UK sovereigns and Britannias. Are you actually meaning like the physical coins?
The physical coins, yes. So these are places where you can actually buy those physical coins, and they are treated separately from other assets when it comes to capital gains tax. Yeah. Okay. Thank you, Inkem. So yes, I think the main thing is to realize that past performance is no guarantee of future performance. So just because gold did well doesn't mean all of you should go and cash out your savings and buy gold and keep it under your bed. We don't know what's going to happen. But at least it's important to know and let that inform your decisions. Next slide, please. Now, we come to property. Property is my favorite investment vehicle because stocks and shares sound nice, but I can't touch them. I can't put them in my pocket. I can't feel it. Property, on the other hand, you can see it. It's right there. You can check it. You know your investment is there. It's not because you're believing the bank that says, yes, your money is in the bank, but no, it's not really in the bank. Yes? So when you invest in property, you're buying something that is real. You're also buying something that is impacting other people's lives positively. You're giving people a place to live, a place to build their lives and to raise their families. Now, there are two ways in which we make money from property. You make money from the rental income, and you also make money from the long-term capital growth of the asset. And in the UK, we know that property has been increasing in value for quite a while. But there are downsides to property investment. Property requires a large amount of capital to invest. The typical requirement is 25% down payment. So if you want to buy a house that's £200,000, you are looking at a £50,000 deposit. And that's quite a significant amount of capital to start with. Property is also not liquid. And when we say liquid, we mean the ability to sell it or to convert it into cash. Now, yes, you might have your house and you might think, yep, I want to sell it and I want to go on holiday to the Bahamas. But unfortunately, at that time, the market is not at the right position. There aren't enough buyers in the market, so you can't sell. You have to hold on to that asset until the time is right. It also comes with real responsibilities and costs. As a landlord, it takes your time. You need a lot of time and dedication. You have mortgage fees, you've got legal fees, you've got stamp duty, you've got repair costs. There are a lot of real requirements to invest in property. So don't believe anybody that tells you that property is hands-free, property is easy. That is not true. Next slide, please. Now, remember when I talked about inflation and leverage? Now, this is where we want to see them working together in a powerful combination. In this example, we'll assume that Inkem has just received £100,000 inheritance. And so has Franklin. Franklin has also received £100,000 in inheritance. Now they are so rich, they're trying to figure out what they're going to do with their money. So Franklin decides to buy one house. Franklin says, I haven't got time for mortgages. I haven't got time for all the costs that come with it. So I'm just going to take my £100,000. I find a house that costs £100,000. I buy it and I rent it. That's all. Inkem decides to buy four houses. But instead of buying all at once, she decides to use leverage, which is a loan, yeah, from the bank. So in example number one, Franklin buys a house for £100,000. Property values rise. Typically, property values have doubled in the UK every 10 years. Again, previous performance is not an indicator of what's going to happen in the future, but typically that's what's happened. So we can say that in this example, after 20 years, Franklin sells her house at £300,000. And she's done really well. She's made a profit of £200,000. That's wonderful, and she's really proud of herself. Inkem, on the other hand, put 25% down on each of her four houses, which means she has to borrow £75,000 on each one of those houses. So in total, she's borrowed £300,000 from the bank. Now, she keeps that asset for 20 years, same time as Franklin. And in 20 years' time, she says, I've had enough of this. I want to sell. So she sells all her four houses, but now they're all valued at $300,000, just the same value as Franklin. So when she sells, she now has £1.2 million in her pocket. Now, that is amazing, right? Just because she borrowed money to use that to leverage her access to more properties. But she still owes the bank £300,000. Let's not forget, income no going on holiday yet. Yes? So she has to pay the bank £300,000. So she pays them £300,000 and she's still left with £900,000. Can you see the power of leverage and borrowing, right? You've used the bank's money to make more money than what you would have done just by taking the easy route out. But what I also want you to notice is the power of inflation. She borrowed this money 20 years ago. That's in 2006. So in 2006, she borrowed £300,000. In 2026, how much does she owe? Has it gone up? It's still £300,000. It hasn't changed. She has kept £300,000. It's still the same. But what you need to notice, actually, is the silent killer of money. Inflation. It's eroding the value of the money. So actually, in real terms, she doesn't owe the bank £300,000 in 2026. She owes the money, the bank, probably about £150,000 or £120,000 in real terms, because the £300,000 has reduced in value due to inflation. So leverage has pushed your profits up, and inflation has reduced your costs. So therefore, you've made quite a bit of a gain. Does that make sense? Income, please.
But what about the interest?
What about?
I mean, it would be amazing if mortgage companies just give you £300,000 like that, but there's going to be interest on.
But that's the beauty of property. Property, you rent it out, and the rent that you receive has to cover the cost of borrowing that money. So throughout that 20 years, your rent has covered the cost of the borrowing. So it is literally pure returns when you look at it that way.
Minus the capital gains tax.
Minus capital gains tax, minus stamp duty, minus the repairs, minus everything that comes in. But just for illustrating purposes, I just want you to see the power of leverage and inflation when you put it to good use. Okay? Next slide, please. So this slide shows that there are three powerful strategies to grow your wealth through property. One of them is through buy-to-lets, which is what we typically know. You buy a house, you rent it out, it covers the costs, and you make a monthly income, and you benefit from the growth, the capital growth of the asset. There's also rent-to-rent, which is a relatively new strategy, which is more for the younger members who would... It works in this way. You find a landlord who is really tired of managing and dealing with property, and you take his asset from him, you sign an agreement, you take his asset, and you manage the asset for him. But because you are savvy with the internet, you're savvy with marketing, you're savvy with your connections, you know that you can rent this property for £1,200 a month. But the landlord only wants £1,000. To cover his mortgage and make a little bit of a benefit. So that's how you make money in rent to rent. You take the assets from someone who doesn't really want to manage it. You agree a lower return, and then you take the difference. In this case, will be £200. The benefit of this option is that you don't have to deal with the expensive capital costs involved in investing, and it's a stepping stone for getting into other forms of investing, which can then move you on to creating a portfolio. The final one is called flipping. Flipping is when you take, you buy an asset which is below market value, right? So in this example, we will take an asset that you know down the road is worth £130,000. You would buy it in auction or through negotiation for £100,000. You spend £10,000 to add value to it, to bring it back up to a really good quality that people would buy it. you sell it for £130,000, which is what the market value is. You take out the costs, which was £100,000 plus the £10,000, and you've made a profit of £20,000. So that's how flipping works. You take an asset that has run down, you do it up, you sell it for a good value, and you take the profit from the difference. Now, I think the main thing here is that property is a very good vehicle for making money, but property, or for growing our wealth. But property also amplifies whatever bad habits we have. So, if you have bad budgeting skills, you will collapse your deals because you will not be able to take account of everything you need to do. If you have bad debt management skills, you will run into trouble quickly because you have to deal with mortgages and you will get into legal issues. The principles don't change. You are just using the same skills but operating at a larger scales. So you need to always make sure that your foundation is solid and you have basically taking very good care of your bad habits, and you have then used that as an asset to fuel your journey into growth. I want us to think of property as a long game. It rarely makes anyone rich overnight, but it rewards patience. The slow compounding and the rising values and the increase of rent can be a powerful accumulator and can set us well on our path to reaching financial success. Next slide, please. The fourth path is building a business. Now, this one is the boldest of the four parts that we use to grow wealth. It carries the most risk, and naturally, it also carries the most return, the biggest upside. When all the parts that we've discussed so far talk about you taking your money and putting your money to work. But this time, business doesn't take your money, it puts you to work. So that is very difficult, and you should only be involved in this if you're committed for the long journey. When you build a business, you're not buying a slice of somebody's business. You are actually creating your own value from scratch. Next slide, please. So these are the typical steps and the typical stages that a business will go through. A business is created from somebody's idea, and you gain traction, you have early growth, you make early mistakes, you learn from them, you implement your systems, and you continue to grow. And then you move the business to the next stage where you are either going to be opening up new shops or you're going to be employing bigger workforce. And then finally, you get to the point of exit. Now, coming from an African background, most of us never set up businesses to sell. We build businesses to last, right? That's why we name businesses after ourselves. You know, a good business for Franklin and Salon will be Francel Enterprises. We name them after ourselves because we don't plan to sell them to anybody. But I think I want us to think differently, right? Because once you start to create businesses with an exit plan in mind, it changes your mentality. It changes the amount of energy you put into it because you can actually see the end goal in front of you. There are many businesses out there who do not have the time or the energy to grow something from scratch. They just want to buy a ready-made product. So this creates an opportunity, particularly for the younger members of this congregation with lots of energy, to not be afraid of your ideas. Take your ideas, run with them, create something tangible, create something of value. And yes, you can decide to either keep it or to sell it. I think I always give this example. There are two examples, right? So you have Facebook. Google wanted to buy Facebook. And Facebook said, no, thank you. Right? Let me just correct myself. It was not Google. It was Yahoo. Yahoo wanted to buy Facebook. And Facebook said, no, thank you. I will take care of myself. And now, Facebook is so much bigger than Yahoo is right now. But there's also the other side where you could sell your business now. So Elon Musk created PayPal. and he sold it. No, not PayPal, it was eBay, and he sold it. He could have stuck with it, and it could be crashing at the moment, but he sold it at the right time and took the revenue from that and went to do something else. So all I'm just trying to say is build an asset and have the flexibility to decide what you want to do with it, okay? So the next example, next slide. The next slide shows two successful examples of businesses that have sold in the UK. So the first one is HFX Limited. It was founded in 2012. It went through all the phases, and in 2025, exited for a seven-figure amount and was sold to ADV Advantage, I think is what it's called. And on the right-hand side is a company called Momentum. They, again, established in 2014, went through all the phases, and exited in 2025, again for a seven-figure amount. There are many, many more successful stories like this. So next slide. So that brings us to what I think is probably the most important aspect of this slide, which is of this lesson, which is understanding risk and return. Once we master risk, we are then able to navigate the whole journey of investment a lot better with a lot more clarity. Next slide, please. Every investment carries risk. The goal is not to avoid risk, but to understand it and to make sure that you are getting paid a fair value for taking the risk. Let's be honest. Many of you would probably think, yep, I want to invest. I would like to put my money into some nice asset. And then the moment somebody says, your money is at risk, you suddenly start to track backwards. You start to think, I'm not sure I want to do this anymore. Fear is a real thing, and it really has the ability to stop us from progressing. But what I want us to be thinking about is the opportunity cost of not investing. Keeping your money in the bank account rather than putting it into something that grows is safe, but the problem is, like I've shown you with inflation, it's reducing in value whilst it's sitting in the bank versus you putting it into something which you have researched, you have checked, you've valued, and you're quite confident that it's not a Ponzi scheme and it's going to grow, the opportunities available are much greater. So I think we should try to change the mindset of letting fear stop us from investing. Now, I want us to understand risk and reward. The main thing to understand here is that the higher the risk, the higher the reward. Okay? So I give the example of Bitcoin. Bitcoin is untested. It's completely unstable. It's unregulated. You put your money in Bitcoin and you lose it, no government is going to save you because it's your risk. There's no government protection provided whatsoever. But that risk is balanced by the return. From 2022 to 2024, the value of Bitcoin rose from $16,000 to $64,000. That is a huge increase. As at the beginning of this year, Bitcoin reached a value of $124,000. So you can understand it's risky, but then the return is equal. Now, at the same time, it's important to mention that in between all of those peaks, Bitcoin crashed 50%, 80%. You understand? So it just goes like this. So the risk matches the reward, if that makes sense. The other thing we can do is to look at your time horizon. Nobody wants to make money overnight. Everybody wants to make money overnight. The reality is you can't make money overnight without taking huge risk. Whereas the mindset is to try to look at investing as a long-term game. Now, I hesitate saying that because I don't want anyone here who is further along in age to think, well, why am I listening to this guy talk all this time? Because investing is not for me. I'm too old. I don't have enough time to do it. It's a young person's game. I want to encourage you that it is not a young person's game. All you have to do, though, is take the strategy that suits your position and your time in life. You can put together different baskets of investment which help you to achieve your goal over a short period of time. But that takes a slightly different strategy to somebody who is 24 years old, who is just starting out, who has the ability to make a lot of mistakes, lose a lot of money, but still end up with their goal. So please do not be discouraged about the time horizon. Another thing to hedge against risk is diversification. Do not put all of your eggs into one basket. Try to find different things. So we've talked about gold today. Gold enables you to balance the risk of the stock market. We've talked about bonds. Bonds are a safe haven to put your money. So if you understand all of these items and you're able to balance your portfolio properly, you are able to manage the risk and you will, in the long term, you will come out, successful. Next slide, please. I hesitated to put this slide on there, but I felt it was really important because you don't want to create a rosy picture of investment without telling people the truth about the fact that there are risks involved. So this here shows a chart of all the major market crashes that have been in the last 50 years. And you can see that there have been quite a few. So putting your money in the stock market is not a risk-free enterprise. However, what I do want, hope that this image encourages you is that you can see that after every drop, there has been a significant rise. So do not be discouraged. You might see red when you look into your account, but over time, and with trust and faith and belief, you will turn into green and you will be rewarded for taking the risk. Next slide, please. So the main thing is to find the risk level that works for you. So one asset I want to introduce you to is something called the return on investment. So this is a way of calculating the returns on different assets. So you can't really compare property to stocks. You can't compare stocks to bonds. They're all different things. But if you use the return on investment calculator, you are then able to get a figure for your returns and you're able to do a direct comparison across them. As you can see from this slide here, the bonds typically return about 3%. Property typically returns about 5%. And stocks and shares typically return about 8%. Now, these are all typical figures. They would vary depending on your location, time and risk appetite. But what I do want to point out, though, is the fact that using return on investment, bonds become the benchmark for comparing every investment that you take. Because if you remember from the bond slide, you loan your money to the bank, to the government, you get a fixed return, and you get your money back for doing nothing. Right? So that becomes effectively as a low-risk item, yes?
So obviously earlier you mentioned ISAs, right, which are tax-free.
Yes.
But like looking at bonds with a return of 3% and thinking about tax, like how much tax do you pay on the 3%?
So if you invest... and you can buy bonds within an ISA, it is tax-free. So your returns are all pure returns to yourself without any tax. When you buy bonds outside of an ISA, that is when you have to pay tax, and that's where you would have to balance the tax versus the returns. So if at the end, if let's say for whatever reason you have used up your cash ISA allocation and you have to invest outside of an ISA account and you have to buy bonds, then you have to balance the returns against the tax. So therefore, in that case, what really will happen is you will realize that you probably need to take more risk to make it worth your while, as opposed to just buying bonds, because the tax will claw away at your 3%. It will not take all of it away, but you probably end up with 2% because you end up paying 1% in tax. Is that okay? So I think the main thing is that bonds become the base, the benchmark for comparison to every investment decision that you make. You ask yourself, should I invest in the stock market? Will I get more than 3%? If the answer is yes, invest in the stock market. Will I get less than 3%? If it's less than 3%, put your money in bonds. Does that make sense? So the bonds becomes the benchmark comparison for any investment decision that you make using the ROI calculator. Property, you would, yeah, does it? It says 5%, but your time, your energy, your effort, all of that, is it worth the extra 2%? Or should I just stick my money into bonds and sleep and get paid every year for that? So just make that assessment every time before you make an investment decision. Next slide, please. Sorry, the next one. So this slide here is talking about the power of starting early. So in this slide, I've got two individuals, Nana and Kwame. So Nana starts investing in 1996. She takes £1,000 as her initial investment, and she invests £100 every month religiously. Kwame does exactly the same with the same amount, except he starts 4 years later. What you can see is that the returns are significantly greater. It's almost double just by waiting the 4 years. So what this slide really wants to emphasize is the importance of starting now and starting early on your investment decision. That's what time is your friend, because compound interest works with time. The other point I want us to realize on this slide is consistency. They both took £100 every month and invested it consistently. So ending up with £300,000 is not a bad thing. Just be consistent. Just because somebody started 4 years ahead of you should not discourage you. Next slide, please. So this slide shows us a summary of our investment toolkit. We've learned about stocks and shares, ETFs, bonds, commodities, property, and investment. We see the benefits of each of them and how they can contribute to a powerful portfolio. Next one. Now, I want us to tie this all back into what we've been doing over the series so far, the part one and part two. So in part one, we have developed a solid foundation. We have gained knowledge. We've got good budgeting skills. We've eliminated all of our debt. We've got a positive mindset, and we've built our emergency fund. That way, in this example, we have taken £200 disposable income and increased it to about £420. Now, this £420 now takes us to the next stage of our journey, which is the investment stage. And in this particular example, Kwame decides to invest the £420 into ETFs and stocks and shares. Now, it's really important to understand the risk here. Like we said, picking one particular stock and being successful is very difficult. There are stock managers who have been doing this for years, and they have failed to be able to beat the market by picking individual stocks. So it's really difficult. So I would always suggest that when investing, you have a mix of ETFs. So ETFs is always the best vehicle for somebody who is starting in the market. So Kwame has decided to put his money into ETFs and stocks and shares for the first 5 years, and consistently every month keep investing that amount of money. After the first 5 years, he then decides he's now gained enough knowledge to add another asset into his portfolio. So he decides to add property to his portfolio. That money keeps recycling, and I take you back to my loop, the sustainable loop. So he keeps taking the money out of the stocks and shares, the ETFs, because they pay dividends, and the rental returns, and puts it back into the asset. That asset keeps growing, and so does his portfolio. At the next stage, he is now further on in life and should now be considering taking slightly less risks. So his portfolio starts to get more and more diversified. He decides to buy some more gold and some more commodities to add onto his portfolio. And then when he is now towards, let's just say, his 50s, he then decides, as you can see, the portfolio starts to reduce in risk. So the ETFs start to reduce. The individual stocks and shares start to reduce. and the bonds increase and the properties increase. So that is how the point of this slide is to try and show the journey of how your assets will mix and will change over time as you go on your investment journey. Next slide, please. So the key message is that we need to keep learning. So this slide here shows a list of resources that I have personally benefited from on my journey. And I would hope that you would have a look at these items and have a look at these resources and help that along your investment journey. I find that the YouTubes and the podcasts are really good passive sources of education. Whilst you're doing the cleaning around the house, just have one of these guys talking in your ears and it will really, really change your life. Return to this list to make good use of the assets. The next line, please. So, finally, I want you to turn all that we've talked about today into tangible actions. So this week, I want us to look at trying to learn the basics and to set a clear and realistic goal. That's probably what we should try to achieve this week. This month, if possible, try to educate yourself. Pick one book from that list, pick one podcast or one YouTube channel from that list, and try to use that to help you on your journey to financial freedom. In the next 3 months or 90 days, I want you to learn one asset class in depth, whether it's stocks and shares, whether it's property, whether it's bonds. Pick an asset class, and by the end of a three-month period, make sure that you are in a position where you are confident enough to start thinking about taking the step to invest. But I heed this warning, do not make any investments until you have established your emergency fund. Your emergency fund is really important. Your safety net is extremely important. So keep learning and keep building your emergency fund until you are ready to jump into the market. And at the end of this year, and you should try to aim to open an investment account to buy your first low-cost ETF and try to be consistent in investing. And then going on from there, the sky is the limit. You need to automate your investments, so you need to take the emotions out of it. You don't want to be, oh, can I afford £100 this month? Can I afford £100 next month? Just set it and leave it. You need to stay consistent and to learn, and then finally, always learn a new asset class. So if it is property, you learn about property, make sure you're fully confident about it before you move on to stocks and shares or vice versa. Next slide, please. So today, your wealth journey starts now. The important thing is to start small. I don't want anyone thinking that you need to have £10,000, £100,000 in order to start investing. Start investing with £50 every month. Start investing with £100 every month. And you will see the snowball effect of consistency and compound investing. If anyone has any questions about any material that has been shared today, if you want to talk about any potential strategies that you might have and how best it fits your life, I'm always available if you do want to talk. If anyone also wants to revisit stage one of the series, we have a form, so please contact Clarice and you can fill that form and we will arrange another session. And finally, next month, we will do the last installment of this series, which is Legacy, which talks about planning for what happens after the investment stage. So, a date will be set, and that will be shared with the congregation. So I hope everyone has learned something new today, and I hope the information shared has been very beneficial. Thank you all. Thank you.